and welcome to yet another Trev and Ben podcast. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Trev. You sound like you might be a bit bored of it by now.
No, I just think it's yet another one.
No, there's yet another. And there's yet another.
Yeah, people would be going, oh, it's yet another one. They've got another one.
Okay.
It's sort of celebratory, yet another one.
Good. It just didn't sound like that, that's all.
I mean, I'm not saying everyone's having that reaction. There are people that be going, oh, yeah. I mean, let's face it, if you're still listening and you're not enjoying it, I'm not quite sure what you're getting out of it.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to be a sadist if you really hated this podcast to listen to it every week.
So anyway, how are you?
I'm not too bad. Back to work after sort of six weeks off with a broken hand.
Injury. How is it holding the letters? Is it all right?
That's not the problem. The hand is healing up quite nicely. It still feels a little strange, but the actual problem I'm having is that my legs, having sat on my ass for 5 weeks, have gone to absolute mush.
Yeah.
So I've had to go from nothing back up to like 20 plus thousand steps every single day. Then you come home and your legs just absolutely seize up in pain. The other day, Mrs. Ben needed my help reaching something from a shelf in the kitchen that she couldn't quite reach. And she watched me sort of hobbling into the kitchen. She said it looked like a toddler trying to take their first steps. It was excruciating.
Now, are you stretching before your round? Are you sort of, you're like footballers warm up. Are you doing some warm-ups before you like you get to the depot, you do a few stretches?
I probably should have done that, but I kind of felt walking is a sort of gentle enough thing that it's a sort of natural warm-up in itself. So I thought I'd be okay. I was wrong.
No, I mean, I don't want to get into your private life too much, but you might need Mrs. Ben to rub some ointment.
A deep tissue massage?
Yeah, like with some deep heat. Something like that.
I'll float that idea by her, see how that goes.
Deep heat's a great thing if you've got a muscle problem, but it stinks.
It really does.
It's like, I don't know what's in it that gives it that smell. Because you can smell someone who's got deep heat on a mile off, can't you?
It's that sort of TCP.
TCP is the other one. Like, TCP is that smell. You don't smell it very often now. Like, TCP is a thing. When I was a kid, the TCP smell, that was almost like a constant at school. You know, someone would always smell of TCP. Or you'd walk past, obviously, like the nurse's room in the school and just that waft of TCP. But TCP, I mean, I'm not even sure you can still buy TCP. Can you still get TCP?
I've got no idea.
Because I'm sort of missing the smell now I'm thinking about it.
I'll get you some.
Because that wasn't like, I'm remembering the smell fondly. Whereas
it's
very distinctive. It's a very distinctive smell, isn't it? I like it when a smell conjures up a memory like that.
There are certain smells in life. This is a weird conversation, but there are certain smells in life that you just, they're instantly identifiable. There's nothing quite like them. TCP, deep heat, yeah. And a burning clutch.
Burning clutch. Yeah. The first time you smell a burning clutch, you're not sure what it is. I was driving my mate's car and I wasn't used to driving. I wasn't used to driving at all at that point, but I certainly, you know, I never got on well with a manual car. Let's put it that way. Right. And we were driving and it was like this smell coming off the car and neither of us were particularly clued up as to what the smell was. We go, oh, maybe it's just, you know, we've driven a long way. It's just the heat of the engine.
You're doing 60 mile an hour in second gear.
And then you realise, like, eventually you're in someone else's car and they go, oh, God, that's the clutch. You think, shit, that's the smell. I think I fucked his clutch now I think about it. Because who needs a manual car anyway? I mean, I learned to drive in one, but I never got on with the gear stick.
Well, they're a lot cheaper to fix. If an automatic goes wrong,
well, you're fucked. Yeah,
yes, you are.
Get rid of it. But like the stress of having to change gear. I stalled my mate's car coming off the motorway on the top of the slip road.
Ooh.
And then I panicked and I couldn't get it. I couldn't get it going again. I just kept stalling it. Now, luckily, there wasn't like a big queue forming behind us. There was just a fairly friendly and generous-spirited old couple, and I kept sort of turning around and apologising to them. And it was one of those moments where I think my mate even said to me, just calm down and let's just like take it step by step.
You've never struck me as a very competent driver.
I'm a very competent driver.
You're not. I've been in the car with you. You think the curb is some sort of accessory to the road.
Well, why is it there? What's the, you know, if you can't go up it, don't have it. That's what I say.
Yeah, it's always a bit of fun with you. I mean, you think I drive like a bus driver, though.
Oh, yeah, I mean, you do. You. I mean, your turning circle is immense.
And I'm used to driving big vehicles.
And you take a corner, like, most people sort of turn on the same side of the road when they turn into a road. You kind of go onto the other side and round. It's quite extraordinary. My granddad was a bus driver, and he drove a car like that. He always drove it like a bus.
He's a good man.
He just never, you know, couldn't kind of drive the car as a car. It was always like a bus.
So between the two of us, we're a barely competent driver.
Yeah. I mean, at least you can do the manual thing.
Oh, I can do the manual thing, yeah.
I can do it if I have to, but, you know, I always remember my very sarcastic driving instructor. Because the thing I always felt was once I was in third on a sort of normal town road, did you need to be in any other gear? Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
But then even then, when I was on a road with speed humps, I thought, do you really need to be out of second? Because you've got to slow down to get over them. And I just remember going, there is a third gear, Trevor.
Oh.
It's like, yeah, but do I need it now? Is it? I mean, I know the engine's going, but do I need it?
My driving instructor, I had a similar thing. He threatened to charge me more. He said, I'm going to charge you more money unless you put this into fourth gear because you're costing me money.
Well, I just think a fourth gear is unnecessary.
Well,
have the three gears. All right. Stick the reverse on. I think that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Three gears in reverse. That's all you need.
How did we get onto this? This was, distinctive smells, wasn't it? That's how we got side rant.
Yeah. Distinctive smells. I tell another smell that I quite like, but I don't smell very often now.
This is why people download this podcast.
Yeah. Because it takes me back to sort of my teenage years. The smell of Lynx. Because I think there comes a time in your life when you stop using Lynx deodorant. Like, as a teenager, you slap it on like it's going out of fashion. I mean, honestly, the smell in a classroom after games is incredible. It was at my school because everyone's sticking Lynx on like it's going out of fashion. Partly because you can't be bothered to have a shower. So you just think, I'll cover myself in Lynx. But then you go out, you know, on a Saturday night, for example, and you see the adverts for Lynx, you know, and you put so much of the stuff on. But I quite, you know, if I ever get a whiff of Lynx, it takes me right back to being a teenager.
Oh, I think every boys' locker room across the land in this country, after a PE lesson, will hum of Lynx Africa.
Lynx Africa.
Everywhere.
Yeah. Best thing. But what age do you think you stopped using Lynx? I reckon I stopped using Lynx, I would say, mid-20s.
I still use the body wash because it's cheap.
Okay.
And it's not quite as powerful in, like, smell.
Yeah.
So I still use the body wash quite a lot, but the actual deodorant, not so much.
No. See, I've moved on. I'm a Right Guard man now.
Oh, check you out.
Yeah, but the thing about Right Guard is I think it's like Lynx, but for the cougar. I went into a shop recently and I had my Right Guard on. It guarantees you 24-hour protection. And I'd had it on all day, right? And she served me. She went, "Ooh, you smell nice."
No.
And I went, "That's Right Guard." And anyway, we didn't progress the conversation any further than that. But I thought, oh, it's making an impact, isn't it?
Well, that was quite an anticlimax to that anecdote. But fair enough, I'll take the point.
Talking of, not cougars, that'd be a bit unfair. I've been trying a couple of new things recently.
Okay.
Just looking for, like, maybe new hobby.
I'm so nervous as to, we've gone from cougars to I've been trying some new things recently. Okay.
No, I'm just like, you know, new hobbies or new things to just sort of find it interesting in life, right? My life is pretty dull. So I'm trying to find new things that I can do still in a reclusive state. You know, I don't really want to be leaving the house, but things I can do. And I talked to a couple of friends, and I said, one of the things I need to do in life is try and chill out a bit more. I need to calm down. Things annoy me. I get wound up. And I need to try and chill out more.
Okay.
So they said to me, have you tried mindfulness?
Okay. I've heard of this.
Yes, now mindfulness, I looked it up. It's about being in the moment. It's about, you can do it either by listening or just by looking around and just being right in the moment.
Okay.
So he said, I tell you what, there's some great things you can join online. He said, if you download the, I think it's the Eventbrite app. I think it's that one. Because you can get tickets for all kinds of things on. But he said, you can find sort of meetings for mindfulness.
Right.
So I thought, okay, I'll give it a go. So I found one and I booked it up. It wasn't quite what I was hoping because I thought there'd be loads of people online, right? Because Eventbrite's like a worldwide thing. I thought there'd be loads of people sitting in. I didn't know whether it was going to be a lecture on mindfulness or whether it was going to be someone leading a class teaching you how to do it. I mean, basically, mate, what I ended up with, because I didn't want to put my camera on the Zoom, I felt very self-conscious about that. There were only six people on the thing. Everyone else had their cameras on. And it turned out it was an hour's sort of, it was mindfulness, but it was like, I mean, basically I spent an hour watching old people do yoga.
That sounds interesting.
Well, I mean, it was relaxing to a degree, watching old people trying to, you know, make sort of various movements.
And did you try and join in?
I did a little bit of it, but I don't know. It didn't really.
A little bit of downward dog?
Well, I think that was a bit beyond the age group. I mean, even the teacher was. It was very gentle. I basically joined an OAP's group. That's what I ended up doing.
Did you at some point bow out and think this isn't for me? Or did the lesson?
No, because she sort of, I had to introduce myself at the start of the thing, and that it was kind of weird because I didn't want to put the camera on, but I was the only one not with the camera on, so I felt even more sort of conspicuous because of that. And I had to introduce myself, say where I was zooming from, so I felt bad if I ducked out.
Right.
So
okay.
I sat through the whole hour. It was a whole hour of old people doing yoga.
Old people bending.
Well, most of them couldn't stand. I mean, it was...
Fred, what have you got yourself into?
Most of them were doing it sitting down because they couldn't stand up. So, I mean, I don't have to do it again. I don't have to go again, but it's an hour of my life. I'm not getting back in it. And the woman leading it, you know, like at the end, because she was a very chirpy American lady. And at the end, she was saying goodbye to us all individually and sort of saying, see you next time. And I was like, oh, I don't know if you will. Bye. Anyway, I videoed the whole thing for my own amusement. And
I don't know how you found yourself in this situation. This is incredible.
And then the other thing I decided I'd try this week was I thought I would try getting involved in a philosophy club.
What are you doing?
Well, I'm trying to put some meaning back into my life.
I admire trying new things, don't get me wrong, but this is very strange. You've been watching old people stretch in chairs and then you're going to philosophise about it. What's going on?
So I joined it. I mean, I could have gone in person because it wasn't that far from me, but I thought the first one, I'll join the Zoom part of it because then I can get a feel for what it's like and whether I would like to go in person and meet everyone involved. I mean, the thing about it, it was fairly interesting. You know, it was a man giving a lecture on three emotional systems and their relevance to philosophy and ethics.
Christ.
And it was all to do with this man, Paul Gilbert. So he did and I must admit I lost my way a little bit very early on because it was very intellectual, or at least I felt it was.
So what was it like, debating philosophical conundrums or the sort of principle of philosophy, or what was it exactly?
So it was a talk by this man on his reading of the writings of this man called Paul Gilbert and how you might use those readings for your emotional systems and relevance to philosophy and ethics.
Sounds a bit full on, mate, as a way of relaxing.
But then, because it did get quite interesting, because once he'd done his little talk, it was an open discussion. Again, I'm anonymous. I haven't got a camera on. I'm just joining and listening, right? But then, I mean, it gets really deep. Again, they're all very old men. I think it was one woman, but otherwise quite old, elderly men, but all kind of getting really into it. And this one man, he asked a question that lasted about 15 minutes because he kept going, and I shall come to that in just a moment. But what I'm saying is that in regards to what you were saying, it's very much like the Freudian, and then he mentioned all these other philosophers, and he's getting very much in that system, you know, I can't even remember the names he was throwing out, but the people I'd never heard of. And I thought, this is a bit beyond me.
And of course, everyone there is far too polite to say, get to the fucking point.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then, but then he kept coming back as well. So it was like a real to and fro between him and the guy giving the lecture. And it was like, and because he was on Zoom as well, so his little pad would pop up again. You think, oh, God, he's got another point to make. Anyway, at the end of the session, I thought, because I sat through the whole thing, hour and a half, all the thing. And then they said now next, because it's only once a month, this thing, and it was quite interesting listening to people debate philosophies, you know. I mean, most of it was over my head because I'm pretty thick, but it was fairly interesting. But then they're thinking, oh no, we'll come to the next one. But then they said, we haven't got a speaker for the next one, so if anyone's interested, guess who piped up. Oh man, that could be a long, long session.
So are you going to tune back into this one?
Well, I'm going to keep an eye on it, because I mean I think, isn't philosophy an interesting topic?
I think you'd be happy in an old people's home.
No, I don't think I would be happy in old people's home. Well, I might be, actually, depending on the level of conversation that you could strike up. Because I think a conversation on philosophy is interesting.
I think you found your demographic, your fan base, I think. It's just sharing a lot of time with elderly people, stretching and pontificating.
Look, if we were to have a conversation about philosophy, you know, and if I was to say to you, based on the three emotional systems and their relevance to philosophy and ethics, and we look at I can't remember two of them. There was a thing called the soothing system.
Right.
And that's when you're able to soothe yourself if there's a threat. I think, well, the other one was a threat system. I think it was a threat system, because then he could start talking about, like, Nazism and sort of as examples of all these sorts of things.
Do I need to keep an eye on you hanging out with old people talking about Nazis?
Yeah, I've got the uniform now.
So, Trevor, a topic I've been wanting to talk about for the last few weeks, but I've been having to hold fire on it because I've been awaiting the exciting conclusion, is the potential release from prison after 40-odd years.
I think it's nearly 50, isn't it?
Charles Bronson,
yes.
Which, by the way, isn't actually his name at the moment.
What's his name now?
Charles Salvador.
Oh, Salvador, that's right, yes. Charles Salvador. Yes.
He renamed himself Charles Bronson after the film actor.
Yes.
But now he uses Charles Salvador as a... bizarrely, as an homage to Spanish artist Salvador Dali.
Yeah, well, because he is an artist now, isn't he?
He is.
Yeah.
But his actual born name was Michael Peterson.
Right, Michael Peterson.
Which sounds innocuous, but wasn't Michael Peterson
the staircase
guy? Yeah, the staircase killer guy.
Maybe the staircase killer guy named himself after Michael Peterson, Charles Bronson. Maybe that's a story we didn't hear.
So he's had this very long-winded parole hearing, and it concluded this week, and they've deemed him too much of a threat.
Yeah, no, I mean, what do you think about this? Because he's one of those people, growing up, you always knew his name, right? Always heard about Charles Bronson, and... it's only sort of in more recent years where I've really looked into it a little bit more. I saw the film about him and you find out more. And I just think, like, the guy was a nutcase. There's no doubt about it. And he got done for armed robbery initially in 1970, whatever it was. But there are people that go in for murder and then get let out. I just think, isn't it time we let go?
I have been doing my research. I'm not going to say that Charles Bronson, Charles Salvador, Michael Peterson is a friend of the podcast, but I did gift you once one of his
colouring books. Yes,
yes, yeah. Yes. He's released a colouring book, and I think he's also released a fitness regime.
Has he?
Based on how to keep healthy if you find yourself in a confined space, like a prison
for
cell,
an extended period of time.
So, yeah, I've been doing a bit of research as to... But by the way, I don't know if I'm repeating myself or if we've covered this on the podcast, but the shady characters I had to deal with to get you that colouring book, it was not easy. But yeah, when you say you think he's, you do less for murder, essentially, is what you're saying. He's got quite the rap sheet, you know.
Yeah, but hasn't he been clean, like... Because at the, I mean, there were some brilliant things he said during the parole hearing. I don't know if you were following it as closely as I was, but he, I mean, he came out with some crackers. I mean, he said that he's been, you know, the model prisoner, I think something like for the last 10 years.
Well.
No, for the last 10 years. You know, he accepts,
I beg to differ.
He accepts that in the past, maybe. But he come
How
up,
many?
He,
let me ask you this, before you get into some of his quotes, let me ask you this. How many hostages have you ever taken in your life?
Only a couple.
Yeah, he's done 11. How many sieges have you done? Because he's done 9.
I mean, so. He did say, I've been very naughty, but not naughty naughty. Just no way.
I'll tell you, by the way, while we're on the subject, I'll tell you some of the hostages he's taken.
Yeah.
The governor of the prison, who he put in a headlock. Doctors, general staff, and on one occasion, his own solicitor was taken hostage. And by the way, I'm not laughing at any of that. That's all obviously terrible. But my God, he's a character. So right. go on.
Just on that subject, he said, I've had 11 hostages. I'm not proud of it, but I'm not ashamed of it. Am I sorry? Maybe. Would I do it again? Absolutely not. So he says he's not going to do it again.
I love the fact that there was a quote from him recently saying how much he now hates violence.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, that's coincidental timing. Just coming up for your parole hearing. How do you feel about violence, Charles? Oh, no. Not a fan of violence anymore.
Because not only has he taken hostages, he's been on a lot of prison roofs. And he said, I was a prison activist when I went on the prison roofs. I've been on 9 prison roofs, and I enjoyed every fucking one of them.
It's not quite the sort of... admission of guilt or responsibility you'd hope for, is it really? But did you also know during one of his multiple sieges he took some poor librarian hostage, and do you know what his demands were?
Go on.
Well, it's like being a celebrity. He had his own little rider of things he wanted for this siege, for the hostage of the librarian. He wanted a helicopter,
right? Yeah,
reasonable. A cup of
tea. That's page one of demands, right? If you were taking hostages, a helicopter. That's page one. Yeah,
yeah. A helicopter, a cup of tea.
That's quite a come down, isn't it?
And an inflatable doll.
Okay.
Did he want to have a tea party with the inflatable doll, or
in a helicopter?
In a helicopter. Why not? He's just such an interesting character to me. And again, I'm not trying to make light of any of the violence or anything like that. But one of my favourite tales of the legend of Charles Bronson is when he took on 12, no fewer than 12 guards at the same time.
Yeah.
He systematically hid butter that he was given, little sachets of butter that he was given for his dinners, and he didn't use them, and he stored them up. He stockpiled all these little things of butter. And then one day, something, and we'll get onto this in a minute, rubbed him up the wrong way. So he decided to go on a rampage.
Yeah.
And he stripped himself naked, rubbed the butter all over himself, and attacked 12 guards who found it impossible to sort of pin him down because he was all sort of lubed up on Lurpak. So they just couldn't get any purchase on him. So what do you think inspired the, I mean, bear in mind, he'd obviously been storing this butter for a rainy day rampage.
Yes.
What do you think it was that pushed him over the edge?
I don't know.
Does 2014 at Wembley mean anything to you?
2014 Wembley. What FA Cup final would this be?
Arsenal won the FA Cup.
Yeah.
And he's a Tottenham fan. They were playing Hull. Tottenham weren't even involved. But that was enough. The fact that Arsenal won the FA Cup that year, he thought, right, fuck it. Today's the day. Where's the butter?
Well, I've got to be honest with you, as an Arsenal fan, I celebrated by rubbing myself in butter. I was delighted. I got through two tubs of Lurpak that evening.
He is an extraordinary man. And I don't know if I'm disappointed he's not been let out or if I'm pleased. I don't know where I stand, but I think it's probably all round for the better that he remains somewhere where people can keep an eye on him.
He was asked about the let's call it Lurpak Gate. He was asked about that at the parole board. According to reports, he said, I greased up. I took half a tub of Lurpak with me, stripped off, and had the rumble of my life. It was fucking brilliant. I mean, you've got to give it, he's honest.
He certainly is.
Look, not condoning anything he's done, right? We know that. He's been naughty. But not naughty, naughty, just naughty. But he's been naughty, that's for sure. But I don't know whether it's, like, it's, I mean, is he just going to spend the rest of his life in prison? Like, at what point can you say he's been rehabilitated? I mean, there must have been enough, I guess, for the parole board to think, not yet. But I mean, you know, will there come time? He's 70 now, right?
Is he 70? Wow.
He said, I mean, again, one of his opening remarks at the parole board was, first of all, it's no secret I've had more porridge than Goldilocks and the Three Bears.
Okay.
I'm sick of it. I've had enough and I want to go home.
Well, I mean, it is an interesting point you raise. Like, at what point should we say you've done your time, you get to go home?
I mean, if he comes out, would he be a danger?
That's ask yourself this. Ask yourself this. If I invited you round for a dinner party.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, we've all had a few beers.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's getting into the wee hours. And all of a sudden I say, oh, by the way, I've invited Charles round. Would you sit comfortably on my sofa for the next couple of hours, or would you be a bit on edge?
I think he'd be great company. I mean, that's the thing about it. I think he'd be great. As long as you don't upset him. I mean, I wouldn't mention I'm an Arsenal fan.
No, definitely not.
And I'd keep the Lurpak, like, firmly in the fridge if I were you.
Yeah, I don't want siege number 10 at this place. Thank
yeah,
you.
You know, I think he'd be great company. And I think, you get some great stories out of him. I mean, when he took the governor of the prison hostage.
Yes.
He said the governor was an arsehole, is an arsehole, and will die an arsehole. So he obviously didn't get on well with it. But it was 30 years ago. But he also said there's nothing better than wrapping a governor up like a Christmas turkey.
Again, that doesn't speak of someone who's truly sorry, does it? If I walloped you and I said, I'm really sorry I walloped you, please forgive me, but by the way, didn't I feel good walloping you? It's not much of an apology, that, is it?
I suppose not, no. And he was a bit impatient at the parole hearing as well. I mean,
was he?
Or it didn't start well for him. It didn't start well for him because he
seems like such a calm, reasonable bloke.
He spilled a drink down himself, and he did proclaim in front of the parole board that I haven't pissed myself. He made it very clear. And then when there were long pauses while the panel was sort of asking questions, he said, we'll be here all fucking day, won't we? So I'd imagine he's got a very sort of, he's quick to anger, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't sound like he's gone out of his way to, you know, put on much of a charm offensive to the parole board.
But I reckon if you invite him round, so if I was around your house and you said, oh, Charles is coming round, I mean, this is assuming he's been freed or you've broken him out. I'm not quite sure which way you've gone about it. But you say, oh, he's coming round. I reckon as long as you keep off certain topics, he's clearly happy to talk about his experiences in prison. So I reckon you could get some good stories. You could talk to him about that. Have some art stuff available. I have some paints and paper around because he loves his art, and maybe that calms him down.
Yeah.
And so you could have an easel in the corner of the room. So if he does start getting a little bit worked up, you can just hand him some paint and say, well, draw us a picture, mate, and deflect any kind of situation that comes about. So I reckon if he was released, you could put him like on a tag to start with, but he'd always have to carry... like part of his conditions would be always carry an easel with him and some artwork just to sort of counteract any anger that might flow through his body at any time.
I would be fairly confident that he couldn't kick off another siege because, well, during the cost of living crisis, have you seen the cost of butter at the moment? It's ridiculous.
Especially fucking Lower Pack, mate. Through the fucking prison roof. Obviously, at the end of the podcast, we always do some recommendations, and that won't change this week, Ben. But I just wanted to talk about a TV show that I am absolutely loving at the moment.
Okay.
It's the new David Attenborough programme, Wild Isles.
Oh, well, you can't go wrong with a bit of Attenborough, can you?
I mean, he's the best, isn't he? Let's be honest.
And he is. He's the sort of daddy of nature, isn't he?
Yeah. I mean, when I first saw it was on, I thought it was a revamped sort of Supermarket Sweep. Hosted by David Attenborough. I thought that would be a really interesting idea for a revamped game show, wouldn't it?
For any of our sort of American or overseas listeners, Supermarket Sweep was basically a televised trolley dash.
Yes.
It was watching some hopeless cretin run up and down the aisles of a supermarket.
Well, going wild in the aisles, mate. Going wild in the aisles.
Fitting as much shit as they could into a supermarket trolley, and then Dale Winton acting like it was the best thing ever. It was shit.
It did come back.
Absolutely shit.
It did come back, though, didn't it, more recently with...
it sounds like something Stephen Mulhern would present.
Well, no, I mean, yes, he would probably do it. But you know he's the new host of the revamped Deal or No Deal?
Of course he is. He's who else?
Stephen Mulhern. I can't think of his name off the top of my head, but you might know who I'm talking about. If I was to say to you, I'm going to relaunch Supermarket Sweep, but we need a modern-day Dale Winton.
It's got to be Alan Carr.
No.
No?
No, it's... I can't think of his name.
Joe Lycett.
No, he's got the big... big white teeth and a beard. He's on...
Rob Beckett?
No.
Big white teeth and a beard? Santa?
No, he was... He's
who
on
the
all,
fuck are you talking
he's
about?
He's on loads of things. He's always on with his mum doing stuff. Oh, he was on The X Factor, I think, originally.
Rylan? Rylan Clark-Neal?
Yes, that's the fella.
Yes, that's... very fitting, yes. I can completely see he'd be doing that rubbish,
It was him doing it.
I think he's quite a nice guy, Ryland, but...
I think he is. I'm not saying he isn't, but I'm just saying that he would fit that... Well, he did. They chose him.
Yeah.
He was the perfect man for it.
I mean, good luck to him.
So, no, it's not David Attenborough doing a revamped...
I love the amount of people we went through before we arrived at the correct
person. I
mean,
we got as bad as Father fucking Christmas, mate. I mean, Christ, we should have just stopped recording, looked up who it was, instead of putting everyone through that fucking misery.
Where's the fun in that, though?
But I think it would be great to have David Attenborough doing it in his style. So rather than sort of some going, oh, they're going wild in the aisles, all that stuff, right? David Attenborough, here with their trolley. They dash around like a blue-ass fly. They're grabbing beans. They're grabbing pasta. They're grabbing all the staples.
So that actually isn't what the show's about. So what is David Attenborough's Wild Isles?
Well, it's the first programme he's ever done solely about the United Kingdom and the animals that live here.
I don't imagine that's quite as exciting as some of his... Well, other stuff.
You say that. It's been a fantastic series and lots of amazing animals. But I tell you what...
You've got blue whales, lions, tigers, and then we've got badgers. That's about the sort of peak of excitement.
Well, no, I mean, that's why you need to watch it, mate, because there's more than that. I mean, there's puffins, killer whales.
We have killer whales in this country.
Yeah, killer whales, red squirrels, hares... eagles, you know, there's been a whole...
Hares? You mean rabbits? I mean, that's not exciting, is it?
Well, they're big buggers, though, aren't they? But the one I really enjoyed, like, I like finding out about the weird behaviour of animals. And I love animals more than people in general.
I agree. So do I.
But, I mean, there are some animals that are conniving, sneaky little bastards.
Yes, I agree.
The thing that really got me, right, was there's a butterfly called an Alcon Blue.
Okay.
What it does when it's in its caterpillar form, it's very rare, this caterpillar, because most caterpillars will eat on leaves and vegetation. But this particular caterpillar is carnivorous and wants to feed on the larvae of ants, right? So what it does is it will attract an ant by secreting a little bit of honeydew.
Okay.
So it makes it think it's one of them. And then it will take in some air and start making a noise like a distressed queen ant.
Wow.
So then the ants will think, oh, the queen's in trouble, we need to get it back to the nest. And they take it back to the nest, where it continues to give off the idea that it's the queen ant, so it's just left alone. And then it will just eat its way through for months. Just eat its way through the baby ants, the eggs. It's just amazing, like, how devious is that?
I know, it's basically just, the simple answer is it's natural selection. But yes. I mean, you wonder how it learned to do that.
Well, that's what, like, I mean. I mean,
who was the first one to try that?
I know this is the amazing thing, I think, with animals is, you know, a lot of it's just instinct, but it's all evolution and design. So you're right. Like, at some point through history, there was this evolution of a process where they thought, well, actually, we quite like the taste of... like, a group of them got together and said, are you fucking sick of leaves? I fancy a bit of meat. Ants. Right? But how are we going to fool them? Right? They're so protective, they'll spray us with acid. We've got to work our way into the world. Do an impression of the old queen ant. That'll get you in.
Well,
I don't know how to do that.
this cognitive thought process never took place. It's just... seriously, it didn't. It's just one of them just did it.
I know.
And that worked, and that's why they're still here. And then that's natural selection.
The rest of them went, well, I can do that. I mean, some of them, I bet, can't do the impressions that way. You know, like, some impressionists aren't as good. You know, some of them probably don't get away with it. Like, some of them are really good. Anyway, I got really fascinated by this. And then, of course, I ended up going down my own little rabbit hole of conniving, sneaky animals.
What did you find?
Well, some of these are incredible. I mean, I've seen this one on telly before, but the one that comes up whenever you search for these things is the spider-tailed viper. Now, that's appeared on several David Attenborough programmes over the years. Have you seen this one?
I haven't seen that, but as far as names go, that is pretty fucking cool. The spider... What was it?
It's the spider-tailed viper.
I mean, that even sounds dangerous. You wouldn't fuck with the spider-tailed viper, would you?
It's going to be my first album. But no, I mean, this is an incredible thing because it's generally kind of in rocky areas. So it's camouflaged so well against the rock. But on the end of its tail, again, it's evolved to do this. It's basically got what looks like a spider on the end of its tail. And it will waggle it around so it looks like the spider's crawling around the rocks. So a bird will fly in thinking it's a spider to get it, and the moment the bird comes in, the snake will strike and take the bird.
That's incredible. I just pick you up on one tiny point.
Yeah.
You said it's evolved to do this.
Well, it must have done.
No, it hasn't.
No, but it must have evolved over time to realise that it needs to have this spider-like thing.
Well, that's the fascinating thing that I don't understand, is that... because that sounds incredible, but... It can't know that, can it? It must just be that happened to work on that one animal, and that's why it's still here. It didn't do it by will.
Well, I mean, the expert, I'm just reading a quote from the expert here, mate. It says...
But evolution doesn't have a will, does it?
Well, just
This is probably the most philosophical conversation we've ever had. Those lessons are really paying off.
It's a good job I joined, isn't it?
Can I come with you for your next one?
Do you want to come to the old Beatles Joker?
Absolutely.
It says it's a snake that's evolved with a cunning solution to catch a meal where resources are scarce. So it has evolved.
I don't know what that means.
Well, I mean, obviously it needed to, if food is scarce and it needs to entrap a bird.
No, but it's bollocks, because wouldn't it be lovely and convenient if we could all fly? Yes, it would, but we're not going to suddenly start sprouting wings just because we want to. We can't control evolution works.
But it's not about wanting, though, is it? It's if you have to evolve over time. You know, lots of animals evolve in different ways to suit the environment they're in.
I think we need an evolutionary specialist. I don't think I said that right, but I'm going to leave it in. To sort of teach me this, because this just sounds like bollocks to me.
It's evolving to adapt to your environment. I mean, that's the extraordinary thing about that snake. And a lot of animals do. I mean, here's another one. The black heron. Right. I mean, this is, again, something that it would have learnt over time, I guess. To try and catch fish, it will use its wings to create like a canopy over the water so that the creatures in the water think it's night and they're lulled into a false sense of security. And so they come out of their safe refuges so that the heron can grab the fish. So
that's genuinely fascinating. But unless someone can correct me, I would be willing to bet the heron doesn't know why that works.
I reckon it would.
No.
I reckon it knows that it needs to make shade to create the environment where the fish come out. I think they would know that.
I've heard stories before about monkeys who have worked out that they can like crack open coconuts or something by using like a rock.
Yes.
And it's basically like rudimentary tools.
Yeah, these
things. But when the next monkey is born, it doesn't know that. It can learn it from observing.
Yeah.
And that teaches it how to get into the coconut, but it's not instinctive. It doesn't know to do that.
No. So it will learn it. It will learn it.
I don't believe... I think you're making a leap in your head about this heron that it thinks, oh, well, what I'm doing is I'm using my wings to create an environment that will simulate nighttime. No. It's just doing it and it's working.
No, yeah, it knows what it's doing, mate. It knows what it's doing.
Well, this is a very circular argument, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I've seen it with a torch. Well, I'll give you a couple more, right?
Okay.
This one's amazing. There's a thing called the Livingston's, I don't know how quite how you say this, a kitchlid. It's a fish, right?
Okay.
Livingston's kitchlid. And what this fish does, again, it's to get prey. It plays dead. It will flop over onto the seabed like a corpse, settle to the bottom, right? And then when a fish comes along and thinks, oh, there's a bit of free food, it's dead, I don't have to do anything, the old kitchlid will perk up again and gobble up the prey that was coming after it.
I mean, that's pretty amazing, yeah. But again, I would if there's anyone who knows what they're talking about more than I do, I would love to honestly, I don't have much of an aptitude for learning or education, but if anyone could kind of tell me a bit more about if I'm right or if you're right or how evolution works on a sort of basic scale, I'd love to know, because it's fascinating.
It is. I'll give you one more.
Go on.
Brown trout's fake orgasms.
Really? Tell me more.
So basically, when they're ready to mate, the male and female trout will get together and quiver violently with their mouths open. Right?
Okay.
Then often the female should drop her eggs at that point. But what can often happen is the female thinks, oh, actually, this male isn't good enough for my eggs. So they'll go through the process. So the male thinks the eggs are about to drop. So it'll do the old quivering, but no dropping.
Harpy. Got a very high opinion of herself, hasn't she?
And then the male will get very, you know, the male's very confused. He doesn't know what's going on. I mean, you know, he's thinking prick tease. you know.
Yeah, maybe I wasn't that impressed by you either, love. How about that?
And then he shoots off, and then she hangs about for a better mate to come along.
Right, but she kind of... Oh, maybe I'm looking at this the wrong way. Maybe she's stroking his ego, thinking, well, I'm going to hang around for a better mate, but, you know, I don't want him to feel like he failed, so I'll give it the old quiver.
Yeah. But I bet he's a prick, though. You know, it's a bit like when you go to a nightclub, innit? You know, you think, oh, I'm dancing with this girl, you know, you never know. And she's thinking you're an absolute dick. Just be off with you. It's all very well having your Lynx Africa on, mate, but it's not making me quiver. There we are. That's it for another informative. You know that Lord Reith, when he started the BBC, he wanted it to be educational and informative and entertaining?
Yeah.
I think we meet the Reithian brief. Do you?
See, I think so.
Even
but once.
My language is more philosophical.
The Reithian brief. Wow.
The Reithian brief. That was a follow-up to the Pelican brief. Not quite as good, but...
yeah.
No, it's been a fascinating podcast. I think we've learned a lot.
I think so.
Before we go, as always, some recommendations for you.
Yes, absolutely. I want to thank one of our diehard listeners, John from Guildford. He's a regular listener to our show, and I'm very grateful for him. I think I said sadists earlier on, who must listen to this religiously, but he's one of them. He's recommended a podcast series called Extraordinary Lives. It's made by the people at Lad Bible.
Okay.
And they basically talk to some people with very unique, interesting stories. I've listened to the first couple of episodes so far, and they really are hard to stop listening to. One of them was a sniper from the UK who had the world record for the longest kill. Ooh, and then there was someone else who'd lived with a very difficult upbringing who became a sort of international drug smuggler. And he's got a fascinating life. Extraordinary Lives. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, probably everywhere. So that's a great one to listen to.
Okay, well, I will certainly check that one out. That sounds great. By the way, I must also give John a mention because he gave me some very helpful advice this week on a wood-related matter.
Oh, yeah?
Because, you know... John's very good with his wood, and
I'm resisting all kinds of childish jokes at
the
moment.
Come on, mate, grow up. And he was very...
He's a real man. He knows how to handle his wood.
Exactly. And
is this why you needed help?
I needed some advice. And he very kindly sent me some advice. So thank you very much. And I did say that in response, I should really... Well, he actually said that I should have a jingle now to say that this podcast was brought to you by John from Guildford. So perhaps I'll do one in a sort of voiceovery type way.
So you haven't prepared a jingle. He's gone out of his way to help us both out this week, and you've just fucking ignored his request for a jingle.
That's the least
you could have done.
I thought I'd do it live.
Oh, okay, and now, for the first time ever, the podcast exclusive, John in Guildford's live jingle. Yeah. Take it away, Trev.
So there's going to be some sound effects, like hammer, saw. This podcast is brought to you by John from Guildford.
What's that, a saw? Sounds like sleep apnea.
So there we are. I mean, that's thousands of pounds worth of production gone into that.
There you go, John. Have that from us for free, mate.
My recommendations this week are a film called Game Night that was on BBC One last week, so I guess it's still on the iPlayer. It's a comedy. It's a group of friends who meet regularly for game nights who find themselves entangled in a real-life mystery. It's got Jason Bateman in it. It's got Rachel McAdams in it. There's not many films where I laugh out loud these days because I'm such a miserable bastard, but it did make me laugh out loud. It's a really good film, so I heartily recommend that.
Excellent.
And the other thing I want to recommend is a drama that's just started on BBC. All the episodes are available on the iPlayer, called Blue Lights. It's another police drama. I do like a good police drama. This one's in Northern Ireland.
Oh, my territory. Okay.
Yeah. Blue Lights. No, that's not.
That's the West Country, mate.
Blue Lights. Have you got a blue light, boy? Have you got a blue light? No, it's so wrong. I gotta do my Ian Paisley.
How many strokes did Ian Paisley have? Jesus, that's the worst impression I've ever heard.
I'm normally quite good at Northern Ireland.
Not today.
Lost it today. I was doing it while I was watching the show. I was doing it out loud. I can't help myself. Give us your fucking money.
That's Bob Geldof you're doing. But that was slightly closer to Northern Irish, I'll give you that.
There we are. That's it for this week. Thank you very much for listening and downloading. Don't forget you can get in touch with us anytime about anything. I mean, anything.
I mean, it's been very childish. We've tried to talk about sort of proper topics this week, but it's just gone to shit, isn't it?
I had a message from an old work colleague this week, and he said, oh, can I have a link to your podcast?
Really?
And I sent him a message and I said, look, here's the link, but I said, I will warn you, because I work with him in quite a religious organisation.
Oh, okay.
So I said to him, I will warn you that it's quite a bit of swearing, and I'm not going to lie to you, very infantile.
Yes, and my co-host is an atheist.
And I got a message back to say, well, that sounds brilliant.
Excellent.
So, Patrick, if you're listening to this one, welcome on board. Lovely to have you.
The more the merrier, Patrick. Thank you for listening.
Anyway, we'll catch you again next week. Till then, stay safe, stay well, take it easy.
Bye.